You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcast, or you can simply ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. This episode is brought to you by Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. If you go to BuiltBar.com, you can enter promo code LOCKEDON at checkout and save $10 off of your first order. And today, I think the biggest news in Viking land is twofold. For one, we have a little bit of an update on COVID-19. Not a huge one, but we'll talk about it. And also, Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks both took to Twitter to crowdsource some ideas for how the Vikings could get involved beyond wishy-washy PR statements and donations. Relating, of course, to the matter of George Floyd, the protests and general chaos surrounding that, and of course how much it is doing to the communities in downtown Minneapolis especially. But let's start with the COVID-19 thing, because that is a little bit more relevant in terms of news specifically about the Vikings. So this actually isn't going to specifically affect the Vikings, but it's still worth mentioning that the NFL has now said you have to be at your own team facility for training camp. The Vikings already do training camp at their own team facility, TCO Performance Center in Eagan, so it doesn't affect them, but it does affect a bunch of other teams that would maybe go elsewhere. The Cardinals, I think the Rams, all have like different places where they go for training camp, similarly to Mankato. It would be like if the Vikings still did training camp at Mankato, and they would then have to have training camp at Winter Park. So, doesn't change anything for the Vikings, but it does imply something very important, which is that the NFL is gearing up to have an in-person training camp and not a virtual one. And that's really, really important for a team like the Vikings that has like 100 rookies and went over a bunch of turmoil in the secondary and stuff, and with a lot of players with a whole bunch of stuff to learn. It's probably going to be very nice to not have to do all of that install over Zoom. On the front of racial injustice, two Vikings linebackers, Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks, both took to the internet to crowdsource some ideas. I'm going to read Eric Kendricks' statement that he put on Instagram and on Twitter out loud to you here. He says, at NFL, what actual steps are you taking to support the fight for justice and system reform? Your statement said nothing. Your league is built on black athletes. Vague answers do nothing. Let the players know what you're actually doing. And we know what silence means. And he posts that with an image of the NFL shield, but it says, we want answers in it. I'll link all this in the show notes, too. He says, the Vikings have opened a dialogue with players, and we're all working toward solutions with the team. If anyone has suggestions for how to support the city, we'd love to hear them. Our team doesn't just want to donate. We want to work with local organizations and get out there to help facilitate change. DM me or comment if you have any suggestions or info. But we want answers at the league level. That's where change can happen, and we've seen none, because right now it seems like nothing, and nothing is unacceptable. You can't bring in people to teach us how we should interact with police, but not work toward changing the behavior of the police themselves. Silence will not make this go away. And he adds the NFL again. Hashtag we want answers. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. And I think the question that Kendricks raises, in addition to the question of what should we do, send me suggestions, which you definitely should do if you have ideas. I'm sure it's not too late, even if you're listening to this many days later. But I think the question is, what's in a statement? What's in a PR statement? We see this all the time, and we never really talk about it, because usually when a team has to put out a PR statement, you know, the issue about which they are commenting is kind of dominating the content that is created around it. But I've now done 2 days of content surrounding racial injustice and police brutality and sports' place in that, and so I actually do think we have a chance to kind of look meta and say, what do we want from a team when they're making a PR statement, or from a league? There are other teams who have put out statements or put out like social media things like the blackout square, where a lot of people have been just posting a black square. It was like the Tuesday blackout. It happened on Tuesday. And it was, I guess, met with mixed reviews. I get the idea of like solidarity, but some of it was performative activism, or activism where you just post a picture on Instagram, but you aren't actually doing anything, forward anything, platforming anything, amplifying anything. And so it doesn't necessarily work in terms of like pushing toward the change you're supposed to be supporting. You're just kind of doing it for points. And I think that that's the chief criticism against a lot of teams who posted just like a black square. And it was like hashtag Blackout Tuesday, including teams like the San Francisco 49ers, which is pretty rich considering the context of everything that happened between them and Colin Kaepernick for protesting this very issue. And Washington, whose relationship with race relations is we'll just go with tenuous. And so obviously that isn't what we want in a statement. And at least according to the reaction, and I think I agree with it, neither is this. So this is the NFL's statement that Eric Kendricks took so much issue with. They said, "The NFL family is greatly saddened by the tragic events across our country. The protesters' reactions to these incidents reflect the pain, anger, and frustration that so many of us feel. Our deepest condolences go out to the family of Mr. George Floyd and to those who have lost loved ones, including the families of Ms. Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Mr. Ahmaud Arbery, the cousin of Tracy Walker of the Detroit Lions. As current events dramatically underscore, there remains much more to do as a country and as a league. These tragedies inform the NFL's commitment and our ongoing efforts. There remains an urgent need for action. We recognize the power of our platform and communities and as part of the fabric of American society. We embrace that responsibility and are committed to continuing the important work to address these systemic issues together with our players, clubs, and partners." And I guess the major criticism with this is that it doesn't say anything. It does not really take a stand. It just kind of says racism bad, and we all understand that. And so it remains very uncontroversial while not technically being silence, which silence in and of itself would be uncontroversial. But the NFL and its relationship with this issue probably has a responsibility to say more, and I guess that's what people are expecting of it. One major issue that a lot of people bring up is that at no point does the word police show up, or any synonym for police show up, in this statement. And so it kind of skirts around the issue. Colin Kaepernick has been very specific in that his issue is with the relationship of the police to black communities around the United States. There is no two ways about that. And so to skirt around the issue that their player so famously martyred his career for is a little bit underwhelming. And they generically say, we have to do things. We're working with our players. We're doing stuff. They threw in a very random reference that, hey, did you know Ahmaud Arbery was the cousin of Tracy Walker and he plays for the Lions? Which is just a very strange way to like make it about themselves, which is like clearly not what anybody wanted. There is an issue with passive voice here. And if you are unaware of what that was, or if it's just been quite a little bit since English class, passive voice is the idea that there are sentences or implications with no subject, just an object. Instead of saying Booth killed Lincoln, for example, you would say Lincoln was killed, thereby, in that sentence at least, absolving Booth of his responsibility. And so it is something that's not particularly well received in literary communities. And I think the importance of this, and I also want to kind of apply this lens to the statements that the Vikings put out last week and the one that Mike Zimmer put out on Tuesday, because I think that's also an important thing to look at. First, I want to take a very quick break and talk to you about Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. For me, I love them in the morning or after a workout. They are delivered to your door, which is particularly important here in the time where you can't go outside. And they're delicious. They're sweet, but not too sweet. They're rich and luscious and chocolatey. They come in all kinds of fun flavors like toffee almond, chocolate raspberry are a couple of my favorites. I really like the banana bread one, which sounds really weird, but it's awesome. They got like mint chocolate chip or orange chocolate if you're into that kind of thing, like a peanut butter brownie one, all kinds of stuff. So if you're interested in that, you can go to builtbar.com. And if you enter promo code LOCKEDON at checkout, you can get 10% off of your first order. Continuing on with this idea about press statements and what we expect from a team. So here's the one the Vikings put out last week. They said, and they were really quick on this, a lot quicker than other teams have been. So I suppose they should be commended for that, for however many points that's worth. But they said, "We are deeply saddened by the loss of life that occurred Monday evening just blocks from our stadium. Everyone in our community deserves the right to feel protected and safe. Our thoughts are with the George Floyd family and all individuals who have been affected by this tragedy." So similarly to the NFL one, you see a lot of passive voice. The loss of life that occurred is quite a far cry from what everybody is actually protesting about, and the community that they're trying to support here is saying, which is that the police killed George Floyd. that's not even the part that people debate about. The part that people debate about is whether or not it was, like, intentional or a, you know, licensed use of force or whatever. But the fact that the police killed George Floyd is not something you would have to dance around. And now sometimes, like, places like journalists will get in trouble for using the passive voice to, like, get around a libel thing. Say you have a fairly cut and dry murder case, and then they'll get in trouble because they'll say, like, so-and-so was killed or was allegedly killed by blah, 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 and they have to throw in that allegedly. That's, like, a legal thing. They have to. Otherwise, it could be slander, especially when it's, like, an ongoing case or libel. I always get mixed up which is which. So throwing an allegedly in there is kind of their way of, like, skirting around that legal thing, and then it softens the message, and then they kind of get in trouble, but it's like they don't really have a choice. This is not that case. They could have said police killed George Floyd, and we are deeply saddened by that, and kind of had the same question, the same sentence, but instead they chose a very, very wishy-washy way of putting it. And so I guess in terms of answering, like, the thesis question here, which is what do we expect from teams when they make a statement, and I think what we expect is for them to kind of say it with their chest, you know? If the Vikings and the NFL and all these organizations are going to come out and support the Black community and support Black Lives Matter and all of this stuff, then they should do so without any half measures. And to me, throwing up just, like, a picture on Twitter of Black, like a PNG of just Blackness, or making a wishy-washy statement like this is a half measure. And if we wanted to get really speculative about it, we could say that the organization is actually more pro-police than they are, you know, pro-Black Lives Matter or whatever, but they're doing the, like, PR expedient thing, and maybe we could speculate that, and that paints them in a worse light. But I don't even really think you need to go that far. I think the criticism is satisfactory without that by simply looking at the fact that they made an attempt to support a cause and didn't really commit to it. And I'd even go so far as to say, hey, if they don't support this cause, then they probably shouldn't be putting out statements making it look like they do just because it's the PR thing. That's kind of slimy and gross. The other one I wanted to talk to you about came from Mike Zimmer. It came from Zimmer on Tuesday. And he said, I want to express my deepest condolences to the family and friends of George Floyd, as well as the entire community for his senseless death. So again, you see passive voice. You don't see any mention of why he died, how he died. And that is, like, at the center of the whole thing, and it's not really a detail you should be leaving out. Peaceful protests can help bring change, and we definitely need change so we can all live in harmony. Everyone needs to respect each other's ideas and work together to strengthen, not weaken, our community. I believe our football team is an example of how people from all different backgrounds and experiences can come together for a common goal. Now, Mike Zimmer has not been always the best about public relations. We know this. But this one is particularly awful, and that I don't even need to really, like, assert that I disagree or agree with, like, you know, that protests need to be peaceful, and at what point is, you know, looting and rioting, or at what point is a non-peaceful protest warranted, and all that stuff, philosophical questions that are for a whole different kind of podcast. But Mike Zimmer does kind of assert an opinion on that, right? Because he made a point to include peaceful protests can help bring change, not just protests in general. And that should be a relatively uncontroversial thing, were it not for his response to the peaceful protests of Colin Kaepernick. And that context, I think, is, like, pretty inextricable here. He said when the Vikings, no Viking knelt during that entire time. They linked arms, they stood on the sideline and stuff, and they, like, did a display, but nobody knelt for the national anthem on the Minnesota Vikings. And Zimmer said, I think it's important we represent the country the right way. A lot of people have died for that flag. That flag represents our country and what we stand for. So he kind of made a stand there. And I actually got into a couple of really long conversations with a couple of listeners on this when I was talking about it on Twitter on Tuesday when he put the statement out, and thank you guys for engaging. I actually really enjoyed those conversations and found them pretty rewarding, so thank you for engaging and being open-minded, because I don't think we still agree, but that's okay. But to me, this feels like one of those times where you don't want to be on the bad guy's side, so you instead just kind of say, well, I think everybody is making some decent points here, and then kind of, like, don't make a stand. And for that, I just don't think that is the role of somebody in a prominent position like Mike Zimmer to be a leader. People look up to Mike Zimmer. People look up to players. And I think that they should be using that platform to say a little more. And if they don't agree with that, then they should either say that or not say anything. And to be perfectly frank, if you hold an opinion that you know will get you in trouble if you say it out loud, maybe you should think twice about that opinion. And if you're not okay with getting in trouble for that unpopular opinion, you should think about why that gets you in so much trouble. I would actually point to a better statement that was made by the Los Angeles Chargers, and they've always been kind of ahead of the curve when it comes to social media, but they actually posted a video that was riddled with a lot of images of civil rights protests and kind of glorification of the black community. It's still a little bit of a, like, togetherness message, which sells a little bit of a sinister logic, which is like, hey, can't we all just get along in a world where the inability to get along is kind of the central problem that people are fighting against? It kind of reads to me like if a bully comes up and punches you in the face and you start getting mad and somebody goes, hey, we don't need to be fighting. And it's like, well, but he just did. That's kind of how that always, like, reads to me. But I think the fact that it glorifies the black community and it really, like, spotlights the people that should be spotlighted right now is really well done, and it's very poignant. I'll link it in the show notes, and I think that's a much better way of displaying that message rather than using passive voice and just kind of, like, saying something so you can say you said something. As for Zimmer and the Vikings, if they wanted peaceful protests so bad, I probably would have expected a different reaction to the peaceful protests of 2016, 2017, and so on. But enough about this. I know that some of you are just dying for some football content and a distraction, and I do think it can be healthy to get our mind off things for a little bit. So when I come back, I am going to tell you the story of one of the Vikings draft picks, one that I'm kind of excited about. So do stick around and get excited for that. Okay, so one more addendum I thought of before the break, before we get into the Troy Dye thing. I think this entire discussion, while it is the third day in a row that I'm not quote-unquote sticking to sports, and I'm sure some people are getting annoyed by that, and to you guys I say I am sorry, we'll get back to it soon enough. But I would venture a guess that this is pretty important in our world of sports. But I do think that this logic and this kind of desire for teams to make more of a stand permeates when a player gets in trouble for domestic violence, or when there is a cheating scandal, or when there's anything that a team has to put out a PR statement for. I think these principles and this kind of analysis can still kind of be just as fruitful. Okay, enough about that. Let's move on to the story of Troy Dye. So to start off, Troy Dye comes from, like, an athlete family. And you always get a few of these who are, like, super blue blood. So his dad played at San Jose State. His brother played at UCLA, actually had a cup of coffee in the NFL. His brother, Tony Dye, I think he was with the Chargers for a hot second. Could be wrong about that. So he gets recruited to Oregon as a three-star safety, which might raise an eyebrow. And so usually players start as, you know, they maybe they'll do a redshirt year, maybe they'll kind of be a spot player or a special teams player for their first couple of years, and usually there's some senior. I mean, we just went over this yesterday with, like, Tony Brooks James, right? There's some player who's ahead of you and some incumbent you have to go beat for your job. Not so much with Troy Dye, who absolutely explodes and has this, like, unbelievable game against UC Davis in his very first game. And so this is, like, such a statement. And he comes in, and now all of the Ducks fans are really excited about him. This is 2016. They are in the post-Mariota despair. We have so many Ducks that, like, were on this particular iteration of the Ducks, so you're going to hear about it a lot. But, you know, the post-Mariota, post-Chip Kelly days. I think the season ends up being, like, a 4-8 campaign and kind of disappointing, but Troy Dye has this monster freshman year and looks to be, like, the future of the defense. He's, like, this freaky athlete, so he's very, very, very exciting. And he plays really well and is, like, touted as a leader by the coaches and by his teammates, and he kind of immediately steps in and, like, skips the usual pay your dues, sit on the bench part that most college players have to go for. He is immediately in, playing, succeeding, and leading the team. And so he kind of leads them out of the post-Mariota despair and ends up having a really, really nice next couple of seasons, especially 2018, which is really nice. But it seems more like his off-the-field persona is really more what separates him, right? Like, player had good college season isn't a particularly compelling way to sell a player to you. But in terms of, like, there's this one anecdote. He hurts his thumb in, I want to say it was 2018, and he guts out this heroic game against Washington. And then he tells this story about after the game when he's signing autographs, and he's like, man, I feel so bad because I was signing the autographs and my thumb hurt too much, and I like, don't know if it's, like, really my signature, and their autograph, like, kind of sucks now. And it's like, of all the things, like, your thumb is killing you, you just gutted out a football game, and you're like, yeah, but that, like, autographs weren't, like, quite perfect. It's such a, like, character moment that's just, like, crack for NFL people. It shows all this, like, grit and determination. And so at the end of the 2018 season, the Ducks played Michigan State in something called the Red Box Bowl. I don't watch college football, but I don't think that's a good one. And, you know, there's this moment. He wins defensive MVP in that game. They win the Red Box Bowl. They're holding up the trophy, and it seems like this really great moment. At the same time, he's getting a lot of hype in NFL circles. He's this freaky athlete. He's been the leading tackler on Oregon for three seasons in a row now. He seems like he's going to be this really great hyped-up prospect. But his season was slowed down a little bit by that thumb injury, and maybe there's a little bit he can, you know, maybe do better. And of course, there is like this loyalty to your team that makes a lot of players go, you know what, I'm going to go back for one more ride, and we're going to try to make something out of this. And boy, is he glad that he does that, because if you watched college football in 2019, the Oregon Ducks were quite a good organization to be a part of. And again, he has a really nice season. He's very productive. He's very disruptive. He talks about how the thumb injury was close enough to like a career derailing thing to like up his intensity and how he, you know, kind of plays every game like it's his last now. And that seems to be helping him. And the Ducks go all the way to the Rose Bowl, and it's this like great time. And so then it's time to do the pre-draft process. And so that's like March-ish of 2020. And so there then becomes like quite a bit. You're going through the pre-draft process, you do the combine, and then COVID-19 hits, and it changes everything, and there's all this stuff going on around the world, and he gets drafted. Oh, and by the way, he has a kid. And when you're having your first kid, I'm not a dad, so I can only speak from, you know, the descriptions of others, but it definitely changes the way you approach everything. For one, it necessitates a certain amount of routine. For a college football player, that's not a huge change. But you also get this responsibility, and with it, you get this like perspective that changes the way you approach everything. You kind of get this idea of like, wow, there's more to life than football. There's this thing here, now this child that can bring me just as much joy, and it kind of widens your perspectives, and it changes the way you approach even everyday life, the way that you would approach what's going on outside right now. And then being drafted by the Vikings 3 weeks after becoming a father, he actually gets to reunite with his college roommate, who was Dylan Mitchell. So now here's the challenge that Troy Dye faces, because he never has had that moment, that humbling moment you get as a college player where you are the cream of the crop in high school. This happens to everybody, right? You are this like God-tier player in high school. Coaches are coming, they're recruiting you. They tell you, yeah, we're going to give you a scholarship. We're super excited to have you on the team. Can't wait. You know, we really came and sought you out, and you feel so special. And then they bench you for an entire year. And it's this humbling thing that a lot of players have to go through. And so when it's time to actually have that chance in the NFL, you're a little bit more easily equipped to handle that. You can kind of go at it with the mentality of like, okay, this is going to happen. I'm going to have to pay my dues. I'm going to have to be on special teams. I'm not going to be able to, you know, come right in and start over this guy that they just paid $79 million to and, you know, has been starting there for 4 years and all that. And that's the situation Troy Dye is in right now, except he didn't have the I'm getting benched humbling moment because I'm not, you know, the superstar I was in high school and now everybody's as good as me. He didn't have that moment at Oregon. And so you have to have a certain kind of mentality. And I think Troy Dye does have that mentality. I mean, I've never met the guy, but I think based on the way people talk about him, the way his coaches talked about him and stuff, it seems like he has that mentality. And he was asked about that, and he kind of says, no, I know. Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks are there. I'm not going to start over them. So, you know, I can't wait to go in and embrace special teams. And that's the exact attitude you're supposed to have when you're coming into that kind of thing. But that's going to have to be his impact. He's a fourth round pick, so I put him in the backup tier. I think he'll maybe be a rotational player. He'll maybe like fight with Eric Wilson for that backup job, fight with Ben Gedeon for that rotational job. But those will be the camp battles. I don't think he's fighting for his roster spot as a fourth round pick. It's pretty rare that you see a fourth round pick get drafted. It happens like one guy every two or three years out of the, 100 fourth round picks there are every two or three years. So fairly low chance of him like losing a roster spot. He would have to be genuinely bad at football and also bad at special teams to lose that spot. You'd need a Willie Beaver situation. And I don't think anybody foresees that with Troy Dye. So he's going to be maybe trying to get on the field from scrimmage, mostly getting on the field on special teams and kind of paying his dues until a better opportunity arises. And he's kind of got the life of his rookie contract to wait and learn and try to get better at the craft at the professional level. So with that, I'm going to shut down this episode of Locked On Vikings. Thank you guys so much for listening. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I will see you all tomorrow. And, oh, this show, of course, brought to you by Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. For $10 off of your first order, you can enter promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com. And as always, Skol.